Greg is a little bear robot in Discord, and he's our producer.
Welcome back to the Jojatorium.
Well, I think remember too, whenever we found the German Scheisser porn.
Let's not lie to each other. You're in twerk classes over there. That's
yeah.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
The fitness class.
Working on them TikTok videos you like so much.
Dead face.
I just got right in front of you.
Welcome back to the Jojatorium. You know who it is. It's Adam. It's Matt. And we have a special announcement that will take place next week at the same time slot as always and totally won't be predictable and won't make any of our listeners groan and wonder why we keep making special announcements.
Are our tickets going on sale in the UK?
They are! Get the Now Special promo code! The boys have said it before and they will say it until they beat the drum to death. Your mental health is important. As soon as festival season winds down, the mad scientist down there in the Jojatorium cooks up some fantastic brews, but with a twist. The Last Garrison is an English special strong bitter that takes its place among four titans of the brew lab with Shatface Pumpkin Roll Stout, Jason's Sleeping Bag, and the new Schwartz Beer. These beers are going to good homes for a price, and all that moolah goes right to charity, baby. The boys have chosen People's Oakland, a Pittsburgh mental health charity, to donate all the money acquired for these delectable brews. People's Oakland aims to make our area a premier place for those who are afflicted with severe mental illness and co-occurring issues. You can support People's Oakland by going to their website, peoplesoakland.com, or by checking out the brews here in the Jojatorium by following Adam at @batch_brew. But just always make sure you tell them that the boys sent you.
Hell yeah.
You guys, welcome back. You guys have shown up in force on our YouTube. Thank you guys so much to all the new followers and the views and the subscribers. I mean, you guys have been so generous to us and we really appreciate it. And I just want you guys to know that our last video is doing great and our Halloween episode's up there and our Halloween video for you guys up there. And if you like that stuff, just make sure you like, subscribe, follow, share it, hit the little bell for notifications, do all that stuff because that helps us get into the algorithm and then everyone can find out about all the beers we're making and all the things we're doing, all about Pittsburgh and everything that you want to know about us. And we want to just keep doing that. So thank you again for all that. But enough of the gushy stuff. We are in round one. It is time for round one beers. Put that all together. What do we call it? Round one beers. Adam, since we are from our respective casas, I'm going to let you go first.
Sure. So I got a little something when we were doing Brewing for a Cure from our good buddies at Trace Brewing. I have I'm going to try my best at this, the Agio Italian Pilsner, I think is how it's pronounced. And it's a Pilsner brewed with Italian-grown Pilsner malt and dried hopped with Holler II Traditional and Mandarina Bavaria hops and a little Hallertau Blanc as well. And coming in at 5.2, this is one's interesting to me because we also used Mandarina Bavaria in our Italian Pilsner here in the Jojatorium. So I'm sure theirs will blow mine away, but that's what I got.
So while you're sipping on that one, Adam, I'll tell you what I brought to the table because spooky season isn't over for me, damn it, because it's still real to me. I have Barktoberfest from Thirsty Dog Brewing Company. This is their German-style Oktoberfest. Really goes towards that Marzen flavor. It's just a good old-fashioned Marzen, man. It's got the malt to it. It's best served at around 38 degrees. It's 6% and it clocks in at 15 IBUs. I mean, this thing is a lot of fun. I had a few of them whenever we did a beer share up in my neck of the woods. And it's still available right now at some distributors, but I did realize when I was getting this one that the cases were going fast. So you might not be able to find that this one. So if you can't, and I had the last one, haha, na-na-na boo boo, you can't have any. It's all for me. So Adam, you've cracked yours and I'm sure you've taken a sip. So why don't you go ahead and let everyone know about yours while I take a sip out of mine?
Yeah, it's first off, the Thirsty Dog, that's who you have, right?
Yes, sir.
They make a killer Christmas ale, too. So they do very well. But this this Trace Agio Italian Pils is very good. It's super clean and crisp. It's a light, golden, super transparent color, and the hops are just enough. I would say it's bitter, but it's not overly any flavorful note. you just get a nice bitterness and it fades into a nice crispness. I'm really liking it. And oh, I also wanted to say, off of that opening read, thank you guys already in week one. We just announced the charity on the socials, and I was already bottling up Schwartz beer here in the basement yesterday. So the donations are coming in, and keep them coming, please. Thank you guys.
Yeah, absolutely. When we always seem to see whenever we do something like this, especially the first time we tried it out, we gave a lot of money to breast cancer research for friends of the podcast, Glimmer of Hope, and people showed up in force, dude. We had a lot of money raised up for that. That was a fantastic time.
Yeah, I think we'll be doing something with them again soon. I'm pretty sure.
Wonderful. Speaking of wonderful, this Barktoberfest does not disappoint. Like I said, it is a beautiful, just simply done Marzen that packs all the flavors that you want in, and it just nice and light on the tongue. But the nice thing about it is it's like sticky malty in the back, so it's like that sugar, like the sugary maltiness, just like sticks back there. Nice little crisp sweetness, and I love it.
Yeah, what was the ABV on that again?
Just a little paltry 6%, man. So you could drink these all night.
Because, yeah, sometimes like you get that from a higher ABV, but that's nice. They got that mouthfeel going with just a nice 6.
Absolutely. I love it. I love it. So, Adam, we are in round one. We have some delicious beers that we're going to be sipping on here. But I have to let you know that the other day I was stuck in Pittsburgh traffic, and I wanted to talk to you about this because I figured you would appreciate what I saw before we go into any fun news here. Driving in traffic, stuck in traffic. And there's a guy next to me in a pickup truck, and we keep just like inching to and from in lanes next to each other. And he had one of those old school, like no fear stickers with the Grim Reaper.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so the one he had was the Grim Reaper that has the, he's supposed to have the scythe above his head, like the sickle.
Right.
And he's supposed to be over like the boiling pot of water of souls, you know? But this one, instead of saying Grim Reaper, it said Rim Eater, and it was Grim Reaper putting his two fingers into some butt cheeks. He was giving a rimmy.
Oh my gosh. No fear. Cero merdo.
Cero merdo. Rim Eater. Dude, I saw it and I wanted to take a picture of it. I didn't want to be that guy who's like using his phone in traffic because I wanted to send it to you so bad, but I had to tell you about that.
That is great.
So, Adam, we are all about pop culture. We're all about wrestling. We're all about beer. But what we are also all about is horror news. So we are going to introduce a new segment here that we call the Cut Man's Corner. The boys visit news as it hits the streets and screens. So from gash to gush, the boys bring you the most horrific news in the biz. Friend of the podcast, Damian Leone and David Howard Thornton are facing a little bit of a setback here because Terrifier 3 lost their funding from the Hollywood studios. Apparently, they got to do a opening scene screening to some of the prospective investors. And after they saw the ultra-violent gore that came along with that opening scene, they rapidly pulled their funding away from the film. This is something that these two are known for, especially in Terrifier 2. The gore was ramped up to 11, and Terrifier 3 has been known to promise an even higher level of gore. So this is kind of crazy because they scared La La Land so bad that they pulled all their money out. But if we remember, Terrifier 2 only had a budget of $250,000, and they grossed $15 million, and they did that all off a Kickstarter. So do you think they can do it again?
Yeah, I actually appreciate that the investors were just a bunch of wusses and didn't want to take the chance because I feel like they would get in the way of the creativity of the movie. So I think they did it with Terrifier 2. They can do it again with Terrifier 3, and it'll be what they want it to be. So I'm actually excited about it.
It did the same thing for me. It psyched me up because you take away the money, you take away all the extra fingers in there that are trying to change it around. And it's just going to be Damian Leone's brain just back on the screen. It's going to be awesome. Another love letter to horror fans.
Yeah, get your fingers out of Art's rim. You know what I mean? Like, come on.
Yeah. Rim Reaper for life. But not all is lost because Secret Santa, a Screambox exclusive, just put out their trailer. And it's being heralded as a near-perfect holiday horror movie, and it pits a dysfunctional, affluent family against one another, and after they find their drinks have been laced with a truth serum, all hell breaks loose. Early reviews indicate that fans of thrillers, gore, and low-budget goodness will have their horror funny bones tickled to death. This flick is headed up by director of Jason Goes to Hell, The Final Friday, Adam Marcus. And of course, if you don't know that film, is a 1993 wonderful, just schlocky B-horror movie where Jason Voorhees' soul can transfer into different people, and he eventually impregnates a woman and reincarnates himself. Spoiler alerts. So this should be a good one.
Hell yeah. That's the one where the scientist, for inexplicable reasons, just eats his heart at one point, right?
He's like, it looks like this will be delicious. Yeah, I should really try this.
Not a good idea.
No, that's how you bring about curses and, you know, machete-wielding psychopaths. So why would you go ahead about and do that?
You bring in little boys who can't swim back to life, and they're hacking people up.
Mama, save me!
Get a lifeguard, come on.
But you can't get the lifeguards because they're out there fucking.
Smoking a ganja and fucking.
Speaking of fucking, we got to go into combat sports news because Vinnie Mac's up first. So from Buckle to Bell and Bellator and back, the boys bring you the best combat sports news in the biz.
Speaking of fucking, Vince, not paying attention.
So like I said, Vince McMahon is in the news again because Vinnie Mac is scheduled to sell 8.4 million shares of his stock in the merged company TKO, which is valued at approximately $700 million. In terms of stock and money, it only serves as 25% of McMahon's total stock in the company. Endeavor has laid claim to roughly $100 million of that stock, while other portions are already projected to go to other interested parties. McMahon is not a majority holder, so this does not affect the flow of Endeavor, but it may spell the end of McMahon's time in WWE. Do you think it's going to knock him out of any kind of creative there, Adam?
Bye-bye, Mr. McMahon. We'll see you later. Right, it's off time to go. Bye-bye. You old son of a bitch.
Durag McMahon is no more.
Yeah, I think that's totally it for him. I think that he will continue to sell it off as he needs it, and you know, that's it. Everything comes to an end at some point. I think you'll still see him like walk out on the stage a couple times, maybe, and say, "What's going on?" That's about it.
Well, he has that sweet mustache. He has to do something with it.
Hopefully, he grows it long enough he can twirl it like a villain, because he's a villain, man.
Yeah, he's like tying people to the tracks and shit. Yeah. So, Adam, your favorite gimmick match, War Games, is set. There's only one man that should do War Games, by the way. Adam Pearce tried it, and he is just no William Regal.
Yeah, well, Regal's got to stay off TV for another couple months, so we'll get it next year.
I wish he'd come back and do War Games, man. I just want to War Games. But this War Games iteration has finally been set. The War Games gimmick match has had some of the best stables to ever grace the squared circle in the highlighted glory of the WWE and the WWF. But this time, we're kind of getting a recycled couple storylines here, because at the conclusion of Monday Night Raw, the Judgment Day laid out Sami Zayn, Jey Uso, Seth Rollins, after Zayn failed to capture gold against Rollins. Of course, Judgment Day was having a great time beating the shit out of the baby faces until Cody Rhodes showed up and evened things out, which then led to, of course, like I said, Adam Pearce coming out and screaming War Games and pitting the Judgment Day against the baby faces. Unless we see a bloodline influence on this match, I don't know if this is going to be one of the better War Games setups that we've seen in a long time.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you. I think we will see it, though. I think you're going to get Jimmy, right? Jay's already in the match. I think you're going to get Jimmy on Team Judgment Day, and you're going to get Kevin Owens on Team Good Guy, and maybe make it a 5-on-5. I just don't see how this is going to play out, though. Like, Judgment Day looks like they're just going to be jobbing to the stars here. I don't know. They're going to have to get really creative in the execution of this match.
Yeah, I agree with that. You're going to have to see a lot of influence here coming from the Bloodline, because they're still the hottest faction in WWE, despite the fact that Roman Reigns doesn't wrestle as often. I know some people have done some Steiner math here to show how, like, MJF wrestles at the same pace as Seth Rollins, who wrestles at the same pace as Roman Reigns. But what you see, though, is a 33% chance that you're going to see somebody that's not Roman Reigns talking about the titles when you see the other guys showing up and at least setting up storylines. Roman Reigns just shows up, like his shirt would say, show up, wreck everybody, and leave. I mean, he's got to have some influence on it, though, too. If you'd see Roman Reigns come back through and do something, that'd be cool. Right.
Yeah, is he's not booked for the Survivor Series yet?
Not that I've seen, which is unfortunate because who knows, man? It could, Survivor Series could end up being one of the best cards if they kind of ramp up some of the storylines here. So it's kind of flat right now because we've seen Judgment Day going against the Babyfaces for a considerable amount of time. There's been enough blow-off matches. So you kind of feel like it's over. You're almost waiting for Damian Priest to cash in his Money in the Bank situation, but that's been taking so long too, where he's been thwarted just once, really. So where does he start to come out and do his thing solo? But he's tied up in tag with Finn Balor because he's got the gutters. And then, you know, Ripley, she's trying to tie up. Like, I don't know. I feel like the Judgment Day is kind of getting stale too, but a lot quicker than the Bloodline did.
Yeah, I agree. And there needs to be a shot in the arm like the Bloodline got to make it revitalized. I still want to see a great showing for my boy Gutters Balor. Like, that'd be very nice. But we'll see. I will be watching, that's for sure.
Absolutely. I'll be watching too, because this is one of my favorite cards of the year. So it's going to be on my TV for sure, man. Real quick too, because OnlyFans seems to be a very influential force in wrestling these days. We saw an exit of one female star in The Bunny, who's also known as Allie in TNA and Impact. She's been quietly released from AEW, where reports are coming in saying it's a very mutual separation. And the moment it was announced that she was out of AEW, she launches her OnlyFans. I think she's trying to follow in the lanes of some other female wrestlers who have found a lot of success on paywall subscriptions, most notably Mandy Rose, which leads me to the next thing, where Mandy Rose has been connected to AEW. She wants to return to the squared circle, and she has been in talks with Tony Khan. Do you think Mandy Rose would actually be a good fit in all that?
Yeah, I mean, why not? She's trained. She was a great wrestler, and boy, does she have the look, for lack of a better term, you know? And, I mean, sad to see the Bunny going out, but, like, if you're going to be laid out on your back for a three count, you might as well make more money on OnlyFans, right?
Absolutely, sir. And I'm glad you said it before I did. We see a lot of these female wrestlers who get an opportunity to be in front of thousands and thousands of people every week, so that they kind of get that built-in audience. So whenever they go off to do, like, write a book, star in a movie, like, or join OnlyFans, you have that built-in audience that's going to generate revenue, and you're going to see people kind of flock to it. So good for the Bunny. I hope you do well. I hope it does not spell the end for the Butcher and the Blade, because I think that are a very underutilized and underrated tag team. So I hope it's not the end for them either.
Yeah, I saw they just returned this week, I believe. So I think Butcher was out with an injury, and he's back. But yeah, I mean, and there's a lot of crossover between, you know, your typical wrestling fan and maybe the guys that participate on the OnlyFans site with their donations. And I think that also crosses over into our podcast fans. So I guess we can say it now, Decaying with the Boys to OnlyFans confirmed, right?
Yeah, I was going to hold off on that until 103. But you know what? It's time we said it. The two big, thick dudes that just troll the JoJo Tour, and we are going to OnlyFans, and we will be only making content with each other because we don't want to upset anybody else. So we'll be we call it the docking station. So OnlyFans.com. Yeah.
Oh, that's wonderful. I'm also going to sit on cakes.
sit on cakes and eat dicks?
and doc,
yes. So Adam, we're going into your favorite segment, going over jobbing. So we got three, count them, three amazing rumors that are going on right now. So we see that NXT, they are now scheduled to move to the CW in 2024 after the failure of NWA, because they allowed an NWA wrestler to be on camera during a pay-per-view that was very well purchased, using cocaine during a bar scene, which upset investors. Now we're seeing that NWA may be relegated to the CW app, which is still a deal, but not as lucrative as being on cable television. And then there's dissent in the back under Billy Corgan. People are starting to kind of fall away from it. Do you think that all of this going on spells the end of NWA's last big push to get on television?
Yeah, I mean, it's not good. What a stupid decision to do a cocaine spot with James Mitchell in the middle of your pay-per-view for no reason. Like, what's the benefit? He's like a 60-year-old manager. Like, it's not going to get him. He's not over. He's never going to be over. He's a manager. And now he probably cost them the TV deal along with Billy Corgan. It could be the nail in the coffin. I mean, Corgan's got a lot of money, though. We'll see, I guess.
Yeah, but the reports that are coming through are saying that there are a lot of talent over there in NWA that have instantly turned their backs on Corgan and are starting to open themselves up to possible indie bookings, because NWA contracts are pretty wide open when it comes to that kind of stuff, which is nice. But also, hey man, you gotta retain your talent. Tony Khan's shown he has some leaks, but Billy Corgan really just lit his whole company on fire with this one.
Yeah, really dropped the ball. And I don't blame the talent. Go ahead and make your money, because Billy Corgan just lost you guys a big chunk of some fresh paychecks in a couple months when you were on the CW. That's your leader. That's your management's fault. Like, that's the facts. And what was CW doing? They had their dates with every wrestling company, it sounds like. I heard they were also talking to AEW at one. So CW really wants wrestling.
Yeah, they do. And that's what I'm saying too. They didn't fully abandon NWA. They just are going to relegate them to the app. So there's still a lot of wrestling to be had here, but NWA could have had the 19th most watched cable network in America. And now they're going to have, I think it's like the 115th most used app on the internet.
Right between reruns of Buffy. That'll be great.
Shut your mouth. I love that show. So, Adam, the devil in AEW is either going to be David Finlay, Jungle Boy Jack Perry, or CM Punk. And the funny thing here is that Bully Ray went on to say on Busted Open Radio that if Tony Khan has CM Punk in that devil mask, he will hold a sign to kiss TK's ass in Times Square in New York. Of these three people, who do you think is the most likely person to don the devil's mask whenever we go to full gear?
So I think this is going over for sure. It's one of those three men. I think it's most likely Jungle Boy, sadly, which will be the most disappointing of the three. But I would like to add, if it is CM Punk, I will literally be kissing Bully Ray's ass while he's holding that sign in Times Square, because that would be the best work ever. But I don't think it's happening.
Yeah, we cracked a joke an episode ago where he said if it was CM Punk that, like, oh, we lost ratings for this. But, I mean, my favorite thing to say is I'm willing to lose a majority of you to gain a few of you. Could you imagine the hardcore fans that would just be on board for CM Punk being in the devil's mask? You would just, AEW would skyrocket. It would be insane.
It would be a weird move. I'll put a bet on it for the podcast.
Okay.
If it's CM Punk, I will shave my head.
Oh yeah?
Yeah. To the buzz cut. I will not go bald, but I will do a buzz. I will buzz my hair off.
I tell you what. I'm gonna cut it into a clip.
Yep, I'll buzz my hair.
Okay. Well, I tell you what, I would join you there, buddy. I would cut my hair short. I would get rid of the Maddie locks.
Oh my God, we're confident, ain't we?
Yeah, I there's no way it's CM Punk, because it's
fucking Jungle Boy.
It's gonna be Jungle Boy, I believe. Yeah. Last but not least, here AEW claims that they're going to benefit from having Ric Flair in the back to coach younger stars and provide guidance for Tony Khan, who literally sucks at everything, including special announcements. Is this going over or jobbing?
This better be jobbing. What the heck is he going to show the younger stars how to meat spin on a plane? Like, what the fuck's he gonna teach anybody? He could barely walk out there. Like, he's not teaching shit, and he's a terrible role model for anybody. What are we doing here?
I couldn't agree more, man. It's jobbing through and through. Like, having Ric Flair guide young talent that's very impressionable. I mean, we already saw what happened with Jungle Boy Jack Perry. Someone got in his ear and said, hey man, go heel as hard as you can. He's like, okay, I'll piss everybody off. And then he lost all his momentum with all the baby face side of it, and he sucked so bad at heel that he couldn't get over with those sunglasses.
Yeah, he got real heat. Beethoven and sunglasses didn't help him from that. I mean, like, yeah, could you imagine Ric Flair just like turning to Sammy Guevara and be like, hey, did you ever see a helicopter inside of an airplane? Let me show you. There's nothing to worry about, kid.
Yeah, I pulled my dick out in front of a stewardess. Whatever. several stewardesses. So Adam, you know who's not going to terrorize a plane?
Our sponsors.
We don't have sponsors.
They wouldn't. They will not.
No.
And once we sell these tickets for Wembley Stadium in our mega super pay-per-view extravaganza with casting views, we're going to get some sponsors.
Absolutely. And then our OnlyFans money that we're going to generate will cover all of our private jet expenses. But until then, we will feature our friends in the podcast world. So if you support our friends and you support us, and when you support us, we do some pretty cool stuff. So we'll see you on the other side.
See ya.
Work sucks. Am I right, Jay?
Yeah, Kay, it does. But luckily, the Fuck My Work Life podcast is here to help you through.
In this comedy podcast, we share memorable workplace stories through guests and listener submissions in the hopes of brightening your day. Or at least leave you thinking, maybe you don't have it so bad after all.
Listen to Fuck My Work Life on your favorite podcast platform and follow us on all the socials at FMWLpod.
Welcome back. Hopefully you heard something that you like, because again, when you support our friends and you support us, and when you support us, we do some pretty cool stuff. So Ada, we are in round two. We are from our different respective La Casas. So put that all together. What do we call it? Round two beers. I'm going to go first because you got, I know you're over there doing big shit, but I want to let you know, man, I'm taking it back to that blue collar shit. I just got myself a good old Hams, the good old double M's good beer, baby. This is just a nice little crisp little lager, baby. It's just so nice. And you can get like a gajillion cans for a nickel and a handshake. This is good stuff. Doesn't need much of an introduction because most brewers are usually drinking this or making your favorite craft beers. It's under 5%. It's crisp. It's refreshing. It even says on the can, the beer, refreshing. And it's a blue can. Can't resist that. Can't resist it. Only second to Icy Light. Shout out to Bobby Nacho. So
the throwback.
I'm going to sip on this bad boy and you go ahead and talk to people about, you know, whatever, like Dogfish Head, whatever the fuck it is that you picked up.
Oh, okay. You're gonna go after me for my fancy stuff because you were pedestrian and cheap. What happened? Did you get a pay cut? What's happening over there?
Yeah, we're a continuing resolution, man. I don't know.
I got. They called it a promotion, but now I'm the janitor.
Custodian, dick.
Sanitation engineer. Yeah, man. Basic choice. I think also it's second appearance on the podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
I think we put it up against Natty Bo, right?
And Natty Bo destroyed it. It did. No, Natty Bo was.
Hams won.
It did.
I'm pretty sure Hams won.
Natty Bo's pretty good.
Listeners, go back to that episode and listen to it for us.
Yeah, we'll put it in the show notes. You guys can go back and listen to it.
Yeah, but I do not have Dogfish Head. I actually am being very self-serving and trying one of the beers that's up for donations for our charity we talked to about at the beginning of the show, People's Oakland. And I am drinking the Jason Sleeping Bag, which is our toasted marshmallow IPA. It is a smash IPA, so it is only malted with American Two Row, and then it is hopped with exclusively Idaho 7. And then once it ferments and is at a nice 7.2%, the first lady of Bash Brew toasts marshmallows and turns them into a simple syrup that we add post fermentation. So it's a very nice like dessert IPA. It's a big swing, but it works. The Idaho 7's a very and gives like some creaminess, and then there's vanilla and marshmallow in syrup, and you even get a little bit of the toasted bits. So don't be worried if there's black specks. That's just the campfire. But yeah, this is available through the end of the month while supplies last. So grab yourself some and give a little donation to People's Oakland.
Yeah, that's, you blew me out of the water there. I actually feel really terrible now. So you win.
In all fairness, if we were in person today, you were also picking up some of this. So
that is true.
It'll be here for you next week.
Okay, good, good. So that's, you know, People's Oakland's very important to us right now. It should be to you as well. So Jason's Sleeping Bag, like I said before, is one of the four juggernauts of the Brew Lab that are up for donation. So whenever you buy a bottle, you don't actually buy it. You're donating that money to a worthy charity that looks over the mental health and well-being of people who are truly afflicted by severe mental illness and co-occurring disorders. So, and if you don't know what a co-occurring disorder is, that is someone who is afflicted with severe mental illness as well as a substance abuse issue. You marry those things together, and those things are very cyclical, and it takes a very skilled clinician to address those situations. So People's Oakland has shown on multiple occasions that they are capable of handling those things, and they do need, as a nonprofit, some extra money to bolster up their services. So buy our beer, donate to charity, and help make a difference in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, and we found them through them working with another we've just worked with recently, which is 412 Food Rescue. So they work with other charities, and you know, everybody's helping everybody. And that's kind of what put us on alert that that's a possible charity to go to. And we looked at their website and what they do, and that's why we decided on that, on People's Oakland to benefit. It's not a ton of money we're going to raise or anything, but we wanted to make sure the charity we were giving our listeners and our patrons money to was a worthwhile cause.
Absolutely. And so while we sip on these delicious beers, of course, one made by the skilled hands of Adam over there in the Judgetorium, and then my hams, we are going to go into one of my favorite segments, the Ground and Pound. Because at the top of the episode here, we talked about mental health and awareness and helping those in need. But we also talked about horror movies. And horror movies and mental health have gone hand in hand over the years, where lots of movies will try to take on the responsibility of highlighting a mental illness and trying to infuse it into a horror movie to either project a storyline or to bolster up a horror villain. So I went on to movieweb.com, and they actually had a list of movies that they felt portrayed mental illness in a very meaningful way over several movies. So Adam, I want to go over the top five with you, and I want to see how you feel about this list. And also, I'm sure, because you and I never stop watching horror movies, that we are going to have some added suggestions for this list, and also for our listeners to go check out. Because even though November is mental health awareness for men with Movember, it is also always mental health awareness the other 11 months out of the year. So, Adam, I pitched to you that we ground and pound the living shit out of movieweb.com. Let's ground and pound them. So, Adam, coming in here at number five, we have Black Swan, the iteration from 2010, where we see Natalie Portman squaring off against Mila Kunis in a tale about self-doubt, jealousy, and personality disorders in this recreation of a classic theater production, Swan Lake. This movie is, I think, does a great job of highlighting the necessity to feel accepted and also fighting against people that can try to steal our spotlights. That's where like the personality disorders really come in, because you start to get the attachment issues. And especially in this movie too, where we see a toxic relationship and codependency really form between Natalie Portman's character and Mila Kunis's character.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's belonged on the list. It's not my typical go-to for a horror movie or a movie in general, but beautifully shot, a classic tale, just, you know, updated a little bit. And it was a great movie. It's not something I go back to over and over again, but it is really good. And kind of like was very popular in 2010, really got the spotlight on the horror genre in general.
It was nice when it hit theaters, especially too, because they were riding a lot of the popularity of the time of Mila Kunis, who was kind of taking the world by storm. She's coming off of the popularity of That 70s Show, her high profile marriage to Ashton Kutcher. You know, she had a lot of things going on at that time. And of course, Natalie Portman is Natalie Portman. She's been featured in so many movies that have high notoriety that it's not even worth my time to try to exhaust that list out, because I only have two hams, not a 30 rack sitting next to me. So you put two powerhouses in a movie like this and you allow them to expand on a story that is as old as time. I mean, Swan Lake is a classic ballet production. and to have these two square off against each other and put a big highlight on some of the things that we were seeing in the mid 2010s, really, when social media really started to take a hold of kind of one-upping, like, this is my life, it's better than yours, I know you want to chase it, but it was kind of playing off of that too.
Absolutely. And I do appreciate that you have two hams there, because if you're going to pick a pedestrian boring ass beer that needs no more promotion than it already has, we all know it's great already, at least you're drinking two of them.
Yeah. Well, I tried for three, but I got evil eyes as I had four in my hands, and I had a look as I was coming back into the studio, and I was like, oh, so just two then? Just two.
I'm building a wizard staff.
I'll play wizard staffs with you for a live stream any fucking day, dude.
That sounds like a good idea.
So, Adam, we're going on to the next one here. Coming at number four, we have The Babadook, 2014 kind of like horror psychological thriller where a widow and her son battle fear, depression, and tragedy. And if you don't know what The Babadook is, listeners, this family receives a very ominous-looking children's book at their doorstep, and it slowly writes its own story, and it goes alongside of the strength of The Babadook increasing, where it starts to terrorize the mother and the child, slowly taking over the child's ability to cope with everyday ongoing. So his activities of daily living are like significantly destroyed by the Babadook, almost like a possession tale to a certain degree. But you really see the play on depression in this one when it comes to the widow's interaction with the Babadook, because she eventually takes control of the spirit itself and finds herself again. She finds her inner strength where she can finally become the woman that she was before she unfortunately lost her husband.
Yeah. And a great movie, in my opinion. Not a gory movie, but it just is very intense, and it just plays on your anxiety, and like you're just waiting, and it's all in anticipation. The music helps, again, shot wonderfully. It's just creepy, and it shows that it might even be a PG-13 horror. I don't know.
It is.
But a great example of what a PG-13 horror can do if it's just good storytelling and just creepy as hell. So I agree. I agree with that one on the list. This movieweb.com is doing okay for right now.
It's going well. Yeah. And you just said there's an absence of gore in The Babadook. So number three on the list takes the gore and just rams it right up your nose with The Voices in 2014. Ryan Reynolds, that dreamboat, Mint Mobile, Wrexham FC owner.
He had liquor at some point, I think.
Yeah, aviation gin.
I think that was him, yeah.
This is a comedy horror about the pitfalls of schizophrenia with active hallucinations mixed with a touch of attachment disorder, because Ryan Reynolds plays a serial killer who becomes just undeniably attached to women that he sees in his everyday life. And in his brain, he is seeing himself interacting with these people, not only the women that he's lusting after, but people that are influential on his life. And he has this beautifully shot idea in his mind of how he's talking to them, how they're interacting. But in reality, whenever the camera steps away from his mind, we see that everything is gray and everything is depreciated. And one of the coolest things about this movie is he does, in fact, murder a woman, and he makes it look as if he was able to finally chop her and place her into go boxes like Tupperware and stack her neatly in his refrigerator. And at one point that facade breaks, and it's actually just a sloppy, terrible mess, blood everywhere. If anyone saw it, they would know exactly that a murder happened right here. It is a descent into unaddressed mental illness to the nth degree, but it does deliver on comedy because there's talking dogs and it's Ryan Reynolds, and because he's a smart ass even when he's schizophrenic, and it delivers. It's a fantastic comedy horror.
Yeah, talking dogs, talking severed heads, a great movie, very funny, but yes, gory. And actually this movie specifically just came to my attention in, I think, this year, 2023, maybe 2022, my wife told me about it and said it was really good. I was like, oh, I don't think I've ever seen that. I don't remember Ryan Reynolds in a, you know, a movie like that.
Yeah.
And I watched it and yeah, it was freaking great. Very, very good comedic timing, deadpan humor, but definitely brings attention to schizophrenia and hallucination. And it does a really good job. Like at the beginning, you think you know what he's hallucinating and what he's not. And like what you said, like at the end, you see that apartment is actually just a horror show. It's not even as what you thought was real. It's 10 times worse. And it's a really good movie. It's one of the best horror comedies. It's up there with Shaun of the Dead for me.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Just the way that everything pans out. And like you said, the comedic timing is there. Ryan Reynolds has layers of ability in his acting repertoire. And this movie really puts it on display because so you find yourself rooting for him a ton of times. Like you're finding yourself saying, oh, I hope that he kind of gets away with it, because you feel so bad for him. And all he wants to do is be loved, but no one's taken the time to really address it. They've brushed him off. It's right. Society's blind eye to mental health.
Absolutely.
Adam, we are moving into the second movie on this list here. Number two, The Lodge in 2019. This is a movie that I didn't see until very recently, but Grace Marshall is the survivor of a death cult, and she takes the place of a wife, Laura, who commits suicide over Grace's planned marriage to Laura's husband, Richard. Grace tries to bond with her stepchildren while in a snow-covered lodge, but of course, the intense deception, manipulation, exploitation, and anxiety attacks, Grace clicks right back into that death cult mentality that she was brainwashed with, and she attacks an entire family. This dives deep into codependency, toxicity, of course, like I said before, manipulation, exploitation, and anxiety. So this movie is a highlight of people who can kind of hide things for a long time until they can't handle it anymore. So it's, again, kind of society's blind eye to mental health treatment and its needs.
Yeah, I don't think I'm familiar with this one. Does it get really gory at the end?
It certainly does. It gets pretty gory at the end there.
Is there a castration? Or am I thinking of a different movie?
I think you're thinking of a different movie. Okay. Yeah. But you're not wrong to say it got gory at the end, because it definitely does.
Okay. I'll bring that one. I'll figure out what that movie was and I'll bring it next week, because that one's also a creepy. It's very similar, but I don't remember there being children in that movie. I think it was just a husband and wife. I will check this one out. I'm not familiar, but it sounds pretty, pretty intense.
It really is. Especially when there's a scene where you see her kind of snap back into a former train of thought, and you can actually feel it. You're watching her do it, and the way that they gear up to it with the musicality of it. And then you just see the look on her face click in. I audibly said, oh shit. So, Adam, number one on the list here, and it shouldn't be any surprise to anybody, 1960s classic Alfred Hitchcock vehicle, Psycho. This black and white horror movie, it has been marked as insight to schizophrenia. It's looked at closely now for the trauma induced by severe codependency and the possessive relationship, especially between a primary care group, which would be your family, and its lineage would be children. So the relationship that was very toxic between Norman Bates and his mother, right, to the point where if you haven't watched this movie, I don't know why you haven't watched this movie. If you listen to us, you've watched this movie. But the very end, Norman Bates dressing up as his mother, to inflict damage. Well, actually, throughout the movie, that iconic shower scene. This right. movie is everything that a horror movie analyzing mental health should be. It really shows people that are struggling, that need help, and they're so isolated. And again, the third movie in a row, society's blind eye to mental health treatment.
Yeah. I mean, classic horror movie going from the movie stance. But yeah, I mean, it's in the title. It's Psycho. It's a psychological horror movie. Norman Bates makes a really good looking older woman too, so there you go.
Yeah, he's kind of gilfing it.
Yeah, he's one of the classic mama's boys in horror, I think. So yeah, great movie. Psycho 2, also a great movie, where it really kind of flips the whole thing on its head a little bit. So check that out if you haven't. And then anything after that, don't watch. If Vince Vaughn is Norman Bates, turn it off.
I would say the Bates TV show was good at times.
I can't give a strong opinion on that one way or the other. I only watched the first season, and the first season was good. So I don't know where it went from there. I've been meaning to get back into it.
It goes up and down a lot. You'll find yourself at times picking up your phone to kind of like scroll around a little bit, because it's like Walking Dead-ish, kind of slow to build exposition. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Even the first season was pretty slow, but when it had its peaks, it was good. It was really good.
It flew, baby. So, Adam, these are five really good movies here, but this being their top five, is there anything that you would add or maybe even replace in this list?
I would definitely knock a bunch of these down. The first one, and this is kind of my problem with the MovieWeb.com list, this is where I ground and pound them, is the first one, and maybe not a major misstep, but I think Gothica should have been on the list.
Oh, yeah.
A great mental health aware movie. And then you're missing, arguably, maybe should even be better than Psycho or right below Psycho. The Shining is not on the list. And that's, I think that's super insulting. So that's my biggest problem. Elbows to the face movieweb.com. No Shining, Jack Nicholson torturing his family, bothering children. Elbow to the face, twin girls, big wheels, kissing old ladies. Kissing old ladies and making them cry.
Oh God, the inverse of Ric Flair, you'd say.
I think that is my favorite that could be in this genre is The Shining. Like it's masterful, so it's right up there with Psycho.
I would say I agree with both of those, especially Gothica. I didn't even think about that, but you brought that up. It's an amazing movie.
Yeah, I don't know if that holds up anymore, but I remember when it came out, I watched it. I bought the I'm definitely dating myself. I bought the DVD and watched it a bunch. I mean, I was a big fan of Halle Berry as well.
As you should be.
Take that out of the equation. It was still really, it was a really good movie at the time. I don't know what year that was. Probably like 2006 or something like that.
Yeah, it was early in the 2000s, because we actually talked about it once when you went against Bobby Nacho for the trivia. Yeah,
it was pre-Iron Man Robert Downey Jr.
Yes.
So there's your time period.
The movie I want to toss on here that I feel like got overlooked on here is The Taking of Deborah Logan. That movie is a...
Is that the older lady?
Yeah, it's the older lady who she allows a camera crew to come in and document her what she believes to be dementia. And also there's like some elder abuse issues that go along with that as well. Mm-hmm. So some spoiler alerts. However, don't be so on Deborah Logan's side, because she's actually, spoiler alerts, possessed by a serpent demon god. And she tries to then pass that on to another young child, which is generational trauma. It was very layered in how they addressed mental health in this one. And they did it in a very like semi-found footage way. You can actually see the climactic scene where she's trying to swallow the child in a cave on most like horror movie top 10 moments. It's incredible.
Absolutely. That movie is bonkers. I really like that movie. I didn't even think of that one. Another one, though, since you're bringing up generational trauma, another one, and one of my favorite horror movies, again, of all time, Hereditary, kind of in the same vein, really addresses mental illness and loss and trauma, like kind of on a mystic level and like cult level. But you also see like a loss of a child in that movie, spoiler alert. And how the family just deteriorates around that, and what can happen. Hereditary too. I mean, there's so many in the horror genre. I read your list when you sent it to me, and I was like, where the fuck is The Shining?
I thought for sure you were going to toss Pet Sematary on here.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's in there too. That's definitely in there too. The Shining was a bigger red flag for me. But Pet Sematary, also one of my favorites.
So you have an extensive list here, people. If you really want to get into how horror movies take on the Herculean task of talking about mental health, these are some great movies you can do it with. And if you want to ease your way into it, of course, start with Black Swan, but work yourself up to some of the more horrific movies we were talking about here. I think The Voices is the one that's going to trigger the most people because there's a lot of very deep-rooted mental health issues in that movie. So tap dance your way around there. Do a little bit of research before you start watching them.
But it's also comedy horror, so it kind of puts it, like, there's points of levity, at least. But it, yeah, it's probably the goriest one. I haven't seen The Lodge, but it's probably the goriest one on this list.
The Lodge is trying to take it over. I'll tell you that much, man.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm watching that this week. I was not familiar with that one. I didn't have time to watch it today. But I will watch it. I thought I knew it. And then as you were describing, I was like, nah, this isn't the one I'm thinking of. But I will bring you guys that one next week because that one also just a crazy psychological thriller.
So, Adam, another psychological horror we got to go into is your favorite segment in the second half. Questions from the internet.
Give it to us, listeners. I love what you send us.
So this one I actually pulled from like TikTok trends because every once in a while a good one pops up. Like the cinnamon challenge was stupid, that kind of stuff. However, this one is intriguing because I actually tricked myself for a second. Adam, you get to either just get $1 million or you get a chance for $25 million. But you have to gain 5 total yards as in an NFL game as a running back, as you are right now. Which one would you take?
Am I in for every play of the football game?
I think some people are saying you're in for the whole game. Some people are like you have four downs to get it 5 yards. So I would say like if you four downs, you're not going to make it. But let's say the whole game.
No. I think here's the thing, though. I think in 4 downs, I can make it.
Yeah.
If I have a good offensive line, I think I can make it. But as the game goes on, I'm going to get hit behind the line. That's going to subtract from your 5 total yards.
It's true.
Eventually, I'm going to be getting hit 5 yards back, and you're never going to. So if I'm in for the whole game, I'm taking the million. If I have 4 downs or a quarter, maybe, I'll go for the 25. Not super confident I'll make it, but hopefully I just have a good O-line that, like, will open me up a hole and I can get, like, you know, a yard or two every play. That's all you need. But if I'm in the whole game, I'm totally fine. They're going to start just dropping me where I stand, you know, so.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to say right now, I'm taking the $1 million every time. I don't care if I'm in there for 4 carries or an entire game. I've met NFL players in former positions in my career, and I can tell you that I'm a large man. I'm 6'3", I'm 300-plus pounds, and I look like a toddler next to some of these people. And I'm like, oh, so what do you do? Like, I'm the fucking punter. I'm good.
Here's also another problem. Once you get hit on the first play, you might not get back up. Like, it might just be, you might only get one play.
Could you imagine Myles Garrett just coming off the blind side and taking your head off?
In all fairness, I am a risk averse person, so I probably would just also take the million. I'm risk averse and not self confident, so I'll probably just take the million.
What a marriage of two terrible things.
Right.
So, speaking of risk aversion, Adam, what is something you will never do ever again?
My quick and dirty answer, which is probably going to be a lie. I'll never make a seltzer again. is that a good answer?
That's a really good answer because we were both afflicted by that one.
Yeah. Yeah, we got really sticky and then it sucked and we dumped it anyway. So probably never going back to that unless I go pro. Shit, I can't think of anything else. The only other thing I could think of was for a while I would not swim in the ocean because I had a little bit of an undertow issue and had to get saved once. But I got back in the ocean this year, so that's a lie. I've already been back. I just don't go out very far. I guess that's it. There's one other thing. Water skiing. Speaking of water, I fucking suck at it. I'll never try again. So yeah, there you go. Making a seltzer and water skiing.
Two very different things, but both sound very cautious rendering. Like
100% will never make a seltzer while water skiing.
That's the only way I'm gonna get you to make one. It's like I'm gonna put you on water skis. I'm like, come on, man. Banana strawberry seltzer. Let's do it.
balance that burner, bitch.
I would say in terms of things I'll never do again, it's kind of like going along the terms of like water skiing, you know, I'll never snowboard again. The last time I did it, I got hurt pretty bad. So that's something I'll definitely never do again. Also, I will never, and I mean this, no matter how much money we would ever make from me doing it, making a video of it, I will never take a "this is the hottest pepper" challenge ever again. I'm never going to do it. I ate a ghost pepper raw when it, or a Carolina Reaper. I ate it raw just to like, yeah. I'm no bitch. I'm a bitch. I don't want that shit no more.
Listeners, you can still throw that one at me. I'll take it.
Oh, you're a better man than I am, dude. Probably I remember
doing punishment at some point.
I saw the future.
I bet you do not do well with spice. That would be torturous for you.
You know, it's crazy when you say that too. Like, I don't do well with spice, but when I talk to other people, they're like, "Dude, you eat a lot of spicy food." I'm like, "Am I like a mid Carter spice? I'm like the Dustin Rhodes of spice guys."
Yeah. You're a mid card jobber. You know, because you said Dustin Rhodes, so I have to throw a jobber in there. But no, you're definitely mid card. Because like, you're not good with spice, but you're way better than other people aren't. That like, woo, pepper spicy. Like, you know.
I'll take that. I can eat ancho chilies and stuff. I like red pepper flakes.
Well, you can
and
all do that like the standard bar hot wing. Like, there's people that can't go past mild. So you're doing well.
Yeah, I can hold an IC title when it comes to spice challenges.
Yeah, you're just not in challenge territory. That's all.
No. Yeah. One and done, baby. Never.
You'll never be a world champ contender. But yeah, a good IC. I see champ, a good hand in the wing game, you know.
I'm here for it. So, Adam, what are three things that you can talk about no matter what? But, however, you can't pick politics. I don't know why, because I don't talk about them. Beer or podcasting? What are three things that you can talk about?
We can throw religion in that, too, because fuck that.
Oh, yeah.
Three things. Oh, it's still easy. You didn't limit us enough here. So, horror movies, one. What we just talked about, hot sauce. I can talk about hot sauce and spicy. Let's just go food in general. Food for
okay.
And boy. Oh my, maybe it is harder for three. There's two. What else am I passionate about? Music. Yeah, music. So there's my three.
Yeah. I would agree that I could talk about music a lot. I actually get into random music conversations a ton for some reason. I do have a broad spectrum of things I listen to. So that's pretty good. You make fun of my musical tastes a lot, which granted, it's warranted. I love Three Doors Down, Creed, Panic at the Disco. I would say too that I would also say that I really enjoy, I do like talking about sports, but like sports that I like. I love talking about pro wrestling and MMA and boxing and kickboxing, like that kind of stuff. I could talk about that pretty consistently.
Yeah, definitely.
And then the last thing that I can talk about, and I'll go blow for blow with most people, is like cult comedy, like catchphrases and quotable moments. I'm pretty good at that, man. I'll hear someone say something and they think that no one's going to catch on to it. I'm the guy who will respond with the next line. So I would say stuff like that too. I'm really good at that. And I like talking about them.
You're very good at that.
I like obscure, weird shit.
They only said beer. Like, I will talk bourbon.
Oh yeah,
a bunch. Like,
especially if I'm drinking it.
You should just admit, I just counted that as alcohol in general, so I didn't count. I'm a big bourbon head. We will do round one and round two bourbons at some point, but it's got to be with Matt and hang for a while.
And we'll have to go out to some local places and grab some bottles and bring them back and do tasting. Yeah.
I mean, spoiler alert: in a few weeks here, we're going to be going to Liberty Pool, so. Maybe we'll pull on some of their selections, huh?
I'll be down for that, sir. You know, Daddy loves a good bourbon.
Hell yeah!
So, Adam, for the 102nd time, I'm going to ask you what's on tap and where can you find us?
Yeah. So again, all of these beers that are on tap right now are available in bottles or here in the tap room for a donation. We'll just say a donation. Usually bottles are about five a bottle if we got to put a number on it. But again, 100% of what you're giving is going to people's Oakland. And I'm not even going to sugarcoat it. If you're not in the beer, just please donate to People's Oakland. And you don't even have to give us an acknowledgement. We just want you guys to know that they exist and that they're in an important role in our society right now. Especially if you go down into downtown Pittsburgh, like, mental health is a thing, and it's an epidemic right now here in Pittsburgh and probably everywhere, but you definitely see it here. But back off of my soapbox on that, number one, The Last Garrison, which is our English special bitter, coming in at 5%. That'll be on tap and in bottles by the time you're listening to this. And for an explanation on the name and why we made, look at Bash_Brew on the Instagram. Number two, we got the Shat Faced Pumpkin Roll Stout at 8.5%. Number three was my round two beer, the Jason Sleeping Bag, our Marshmallow Smash IPA at 7.2%. And the newest one to the taps until that ESB hits is Salute Your Schwartz, our Schwartz beer, coming in at 5.6%.
Dude, I wish you would have called it Donkey Lips.
Maybe I'll put that in parentheses.
And if you want to go with Adam down here in the Brew Lab, it is Batch_Brew on all social media. Don't forget about People's Oakland. That's peoplesoakland.com. We know the boys down here in Joe Shore, and we were at Decay and WTB on all social media, Facebook, Instagram, X, TikTok, Threads, and YouTube. Don't forget about our Gmail account, decayandwtb@gmail.com, where you can ask our questions and comments or get whatevers. So from our respective La Casas on this beautiful Friday evening, wishing all the veterans a happy Veterans Day, and I hope that you enjoyed your time, and thank you for your service. Until next time, cheers.
Cheers. Thank you to the vets.
They call me Big Ham Gangsta. That's what they say in the streets. There's two M's in hams for that boy's a G.
High sodium or go fuck yourself.